From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
The FBI is investigating the alleged leak of classified documents and working closely with the Department of Defense and the intelligence community on this. The investigation is in its first few days, so it's important to let that investigation run its course.
That was Pentagon Press Secretary Major General Pat Ryder addressing questions about leaked classified U.S. intelligence regarding Israeli preparations for a retaliatory strike against Iran. The big question is, have the Iranians infiltrated the Biden Pentagon? Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, along with other colleagues, raised concerns over a year ago about Iranian recruitment of Biden officials in the Pentagon. He'll join us later to discuss the issue. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited Israel today.
I believe very much that the death of Sinwar does create an important opportunity to bring the hostages home, to bring the war to an end, and to ensure Israel's security. And that's exactly what our conversations today focused on with our Israeli colleagues, including arrangements for the period following the end of the conflict.
We'll get the latest developments on the Middle East with South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds. Also today, conservative doctors and medical practitioners held a press conference at the National Press Club.
Women and their preborn children deserve the best health care possible, and they deserve accurate information about their health care, as well as the laws that impact that care. Intentionally ending the life of our fetal patients is not health care. Pregnancy is not a disease.
That was Dr. Christina Francis, who will join us later with more on today's rollout of the Women's Health Care Declaration to tell truth about dignified care for pregnant mothers. And here's Exhibit A of why that declaration is needed.
Politicians are way too comfortable interfering in patient and private medical decisions. They're power hungry. They're trying to restrict and ban abortion. In some cases, we've already seen tragic, devastating effects of these laws. In 2022, a mother in Georgia died because of archaic abortion bans.
That was Dr. Trent Taylor, a supporter of the pro-abortion amendment in Montana, echoing Vice President Harris's false claims. We'll hear from Jeff Laszlovy, who is the president of the Montana Family Foundation, about the pro-abortion amendment appearing on the November 5th ballot in Montana. And finally, Louisiana's Ten Commandments law had its day in court yesterday. We'll speak with the Louisiana Solicitor General, Ben Aguinaga, who was arguing that case before the court. All of that and more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. And by the way, it's election time. You know that. You've seen all the ads. Well, I voted early today, and I encourage you to vote and vote early if you can. And we have what you need. We have a toolkit. We have a voter toolkit. If you would like to know more about how the candidates stand on the issues, where the parties are, all that information that can help you cast an informed ballot, we'll simply text the word toolkit, that's one word, toolkit, to 67742. That's toolkit to 67742. And you can share that with your friends as well. And in some cases, you can follow the links over and get a personalized voter guide for when you head to the polls. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spent today in Israel, arriving in country just hours after Hezbollah launched yet another missile attack near Tel Aviv. According to reports, Secretary Blinken met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for more than 2 hours, pushing the Biden-Harris administration's threat to withhold military support from Israel based on aid sent to residents of Gaza. Meanwhile, the FBI has begun its investigation into the leak of classified documents that appear to show Israel's plan for a retaliatory attack on Iran. Joining me now to discuss this and more, Senator Mike Rounds from South Dakota. He serves on five Senate committees, including the Senate Intelligence Committee and the Armed Services Committee. Senator Rounds, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Is headway being made, in your opinion, with Secretary Blinken's stop in Israel? Is the Biden administration helpful, or are they a hindrance to what Israel is attempting to do?
I think their approach has not helped the situation in terms of finally ending the violence. I think they mean well by saying they want to do ceasefires and so forth. Problem is you've got to have two different parties that want to have a ceasefire. Hezbollah and Hamas both are terrorist organizations. They have not and have never been an organization that you could trust to begin with. And to simply go to our ally Israel and expect them, after they were attacked, to unilaterally, or at least without real assurances of safety for their country, to decide that they're going to have a ceasefire is simply not the right approach to finishing this thing up.
Senator, your colleague, Senator Grassley, last year, along with some of your other colleagues, sent a letter to the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, regarding an individual that was in the Pentagon, had left the State Department, gone to the Pentagon, regarding potential recruitment by Iran. Are you concerned that the Biden Pentagon may have been compromised by Iranian agents?
I'm not sure if it's the Pentagon or if there's someone within the IC community in general or the National Security Council. But what we do know is that Israel has a reason not to be sharing their most sensitive information with this administration. They clearly believe that there is a leak someplace. And right now, the fact that we're investigating to find out where it's at, it simply confirms, I guess, in our minds that something is going on within the administration. Don't know if it's in the Pentagon, don't know if it's in the IC community, don't know if it's National Security Council or within the White House itself, but somebody, someplace, the Israelis clearly believe is a leak. Now, I know that John Kirby has indicated that it may have been a hack or a leak. He wasn't sure which, but most certainly there is evidence that we have not done a good job of keeping proprietary information secret. And that gives Israel a real reason not to be discussing a lot of their plans with this administration until after they've executed their plans.
Well, it's been over a year, but there have been concerns about Envoy Rob Malley, who was working on the Iranian nuclear negotiations. His security clearance was revoked because of mishandling of classified information. All surrounding the Iranian community, the Iranian recruitment of individuals within the Biden administration. So there certainly seems to be evidence of a track record here.
For some reason, this administration seems to think that they can trust Iran. That's at the same time that we know that Iran has been trying to execute our former officers of the United States, including the former president. And look, these guys aren't to be trusted. And we should not be simply communicating with the Iranians on anything. And I am most certainly hopeful that this administration has not been sharing any sensitive information from Israel with them. And I'm assuming that they are not, but clearly this stuff is leaking out. Somebody within the administration is leaking it out, or they've been hacked, one or the other. But in any event, I don't blame Israel one bit for keeping a lot of the information very, very secretive and away from this administration. There's something not right in the White House or the administration, because that information should never have been in a place where it could have been leaked in the first place.
Senator Rounds, you've been an outspoken supporter of Israel. You've been very supportive in your comments of them and your actions. If they cannot communicate with the United States, and I agree with what you just laid out there. How can they trust an administration where it leaks like a sieve? But does that mean Israel, it's almost as if they have to go alone. I mean, they are in an existential battle for their survival of their very country. I mean, this is not a good situation.
Yeah, this is not a practice. This is not one of those things where no big deal. This is existential threat to their long-term survivability. And sometimes I think that the administration doesn't see it that way. They think this is one of those things where it would sure be nice if the Iranians would give up their nuclear programs, or we could limit it. And at the same time, they don't seem to understand that for Israel, they can't make a mistake on this. Israel has to have clear evidence that Iran does not have nuclear capabilities. And this administration seems to think that they can just negotiate with the Iranians and get something done. And that's just simply not happening. And at the same time, they've got to be able to communicate with our ally, Israel, and they've got to be able to keep this confidential. My fear is that they're not putting enough emphasis on the need to keep information shared by Israel a secret. They don't seem to understand that this is life and death in Israel, and that if Israel is going to give us information that we would like to have, we've got to take the extra time and effort to keep it secure. I think they're getting lackadaisical on it. It's a concern that we've got. In fact, most recently, when certain efforts by Israel to take out Hamas and those folks in Lebanon, that information was not shared with our people, and I don't blame them a bit. But when they executed on those plans without our knowledge or without informing us, I wondered at that time if perhaps there had been a breach and they were not going to let this particular information out where anybody could have a prior warning as to what they were planning on doing. And I don't blame them a bit. If we can't keep the secrets, and they shouldn't be giving us that proprietary information.
Senator, when you combine that concern, that hesitancy to share information with the United States on behalf of Israel, combined with our lackadaisical support of them and their military operations, and I know we're all concerned about what's happening in Israel, in the Middle East, all the civilian casualties, could this have not been resolved much quicker if the United States would have worked along with Israel instead of appearing to work against them?
We hoped it could have been ended earlier, but the only way you do that is by providing full support rather than dishing it out piecemeal. I think if Hamas would have understood from day one that the United States was fully engaged and that we were going to provide all of the weapon systems that Israel needed to chase them out, to take them out as quickly as possible, I think a huge amount of pain and suffering could have been avoided. At the same time, they're still, Hamas is still there. And while Israel has done their best to take out the folks who were responsible for the October 7th attack of last year, most certainly I think that we could have provided them with additional assistance in a more timely fashion. Part of it, I think, is incompetence. I think the paperwork gets in the way of this administration. And part of it, I think they intentionally slow things down. I'm not sure that their heart is in it. And that's not the right approach. Once you decide that you're in and you've chosen sides, and we have, I think having had the opportunity to help end this war more quickly would have saved lives. And you're absolutely right. Nobody wants to see the pain and suffering that's going on among the innocent victims there in Gaza, or for that matter, in southern Lebanon right now.
Right.
But when you've got terrorists who are using these innocent people as shields, unfortunately, you still have to go in and you have to take out those terrorists, right, or this thing never ends.
And they're even using the humanitarian support that Secretary Blinken is over there pounding his chest about Israel letting more in. I mean, we've seen that. It's in the bunkers of the terrorists. They're using that humanitarian support to bolster their own efforts. Senator,
that's right.
We're up against a break. I want to thank you for joining us. Always appreciate your insights. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Senator Mike Rounds of South Dakota. All right, when we come back, doctors releasing a declaration, a women's health care declaration. We're going to talk about it next. Don't go away.
We humbly, Father, bow before you in these moments that we have together, that this wouldn't just be any other conference, but that literally, Lord, you would reset our hearts to be in alignment with your word, that you would reset the city of Washington, D.C. to be in realignment with your word.
There's no politician, including Trump, that can affect the soul of this nation. You're the only one. The answer's not in the State House, and it's not going to be in the White House. It's got to be in your own house. It's got to be in the church of God. It's got to be in his house.
Our principles never bend to politicians.
Yes.
Our principles never bend to politicians. By God's grace, it will be the other way around. Politicians will bend to our biblically based child protective principles.
No matter what comes in November, no matter if it doesn't go the way you want or I want or the things we prayed for, our focus and priorities do not change as Christians. We fight against evil, we stand for truth, we tell people the good news of Jesus Christ, we tell them the truth.
So let's not be discouraged. Don't lose heart. Don't lose the faith. Stand now strong because the Lord has given us the great privilege of living in a time when our choices matter, when our lives matter, when our courage matters. So let's stand together and save this great country. God bless the United States of America.
There are 40 million self-described evangelical Christians who do not vote in a presidential election. If half of those people who sit in church on their blessed assurance would pray, stand, and vote, we would change every election in this country from the school board all the way to the White House.
All it takes, friends, is one generation for us to lose what is valuable, important, and sacred. Every generation has the opportunity to preserve what is right, what is godly, what is good about the United States of America, or to shirk our responsibilities and to watch what happens in just one generation in our country.
This may not be an easy task, but we are living in a moment of challenge, but also of great opportunity. And we know always that we are not alone, that His Spirit empowers us and protects us, and that He can do the unimaginable. Dobbs, after all, was never supposed to happen.
Father, we thank you. You have entrusted us with this moment in history, and I pray that we would be found faithful, and that as a result of our faithfulness to you, that thousands, millions would come into the kingdom as they would experience the forgiveness of sin and the new life that is found only in Jesus Christ. Amen. This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday. The website is tonyperkins.com, but I want to encourage you to be prepared to vote. November 5th is coming. Many places already, many states, many jurisdictions have early voting. I would encourage you to early vote. You never know what's going to happen. You get sick, you might get have to go somewhere out of town. Vote early if you can, and we have a resource available for you. It's the Voter Toolkit. Here's what you need to do to get it. Text toolkit, one word, to 67742. That's toolkit, 67742. There's not only a comparison of the two-party platforms, there's a comparison of the candidates. There's also access to a personalized voter guide, depending upon where you live. And there's prayer points. We need to be praying. Remember, pray, vote, stand. So we need to be praying as we go into this election, and we've got those prayer points available for you as well. I early voted today. I went and I voted, so I would encourage you to do the same. Also earlier today, a coalition of doctors and medical organizations announced the launch of the Women's Healthcare Declaration, which advances the truth about dignified healthcare for women, especially surrounding pregnancy. Now, this declaration calls for patients to receive accurate, let me repeat that, accurate information regarding abortion and urged medical leaders, medical associations, and agencies to communicate accurately about pregnancy, pregnancy complications, and state laws. There's a lot of misinformation being pushed out by abortion supporters. They're trying to confuse and muddle the conversation, the discussion, and the effect is that women are making poor choices. I mean, in recent weeks, we've seen the left campaign on lies regarding complications from chemical abortions, and this declaration seeks to restore the medical standard for care for pregnant women. Notice I said pregnant women, not pregnant persons. Joining me now to discuss this is Dr. Christina Francis, Chief Executive Officer of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Dr. Francis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony. It's great to be here.
So tell us about the event that took place today and why all of these doctors and organizations felt it necessary.
Absolutely. So APLOG, the organization that I lead, joined 11 other medical organizations as well as individual physicians to launch the Women's Healthcare Declaration, as you stated. And we felt that this was really important, especially right now, for a few reasons. One is the inaccurate information, as you alluded to, that women and the public are receiving about laws that have been enacted in states that are meant to protect the citizens of that state, pro-life laws. But, you know, there's a lot of information going around that women can't receive life-saving medical care when they need it because of these laws, and that simply is not true. OBGYNs like me across the country in every state are still able to treat miscarriage, ectopic pregnancy, and other pregnancy complications. We also wanted to convey the true dangers associated with the abortion drugs. These drugs are very high risk. They have a higher complication rate than do surgical abortions, and women are being lied to and told that they're as safe as Tylenol or ibuprofen. And so we're calling for the FDA to reinstate strict guidelines surrounding these drugs to at least improve safety for women. Of course, we know that these drugs are never safe for preborn children. And the other thing that we wanted to state very clearly is that induced abortion, which intends the death of our fetal patient, is not healthcare, and pregnancy is not a disease, and that, in fact, life-affirming healthcare is the better way for our patients.
I think that is so important, Dr. Francis, because they've hijacked the language, and they're talking about abortion being healthcare and reproductive freedom. I mean, the travesty here in the misinformation that's being put out there, including on the chemical abortions. There have been women who have lost their lives because of complications related to the chemical abortions, and you have politicians pointing to laws in particular states saying that those laws are responsible, when in fact it was the danger of this chemical abortion drug and the misinformation being put out there by pro-abortion supporters.
Absolutely. As you stated, you know, we recently learned of the tragic deaths of two women in Georgia, Amber Thurman and Candy Miller. And of course, pro-abortion politicians and abortion advocates are trying to blame this on Georgia's abortion law, when nothing could be further from the truth. First of all, they died because they took the high-risk abortion drugs, plain and simple. Georgia's law had nothing to do with that, and Georgia's law actually would have allowed physicians to intervene and take care of them. But because of inaccurate information, we know that at least Candy Miller delayed seeking help because she was worried she would be prosecuted, when that's not, in fact, the case.
How can our viewers and listeners help get this information, this declaration out, so that it can clarify this misinformation or counter this misinformation that's been put out there, that it is, it's really a matter of life and death?
Absolutely it is. And it's so important that everyone get involved to ensure that women and the general public have correct information, not only as they go to vote at the ballot box, but also beyond that as well. So people can go to the website, womenshealthmatters.org. If they are medical professionals, I encourage them to sign on to the declaration to join us in stating that induced abortion is not healthcare and that our patients deserve better. But also, even for people who are not medical in any way, they can sign as a supporter of the declaration and also share this website so that we get this information out there. It's so important that people, as you said, have accurate information and understand that the vast majority of OBGYNs practice actually consistent with these laws. They don't do induced abortions. So I encourage people to share this website. Also, if you're having conversations with your friends or your family about abortion, and they maybe say, well, you're not a doctor, how would you know? Well, you have a great resource now that you can send them to tell them what thousands and thousands of doctors are saying, which is that induced abortion is not healthcare, and life-affirming care is actually what helps our patients the most.
Women's Healthcare Matters. womenshealthcarematters.com, or is it .org or .com?
womenshealthmatters.org.
.org. And so I encourage you to go sign that. If you're a medical professional, sign it. If you're just a listener, viewer, sign it as well and share it with your friends. Dr. Francis, thank you so much for being here today, and thank you for stepping out and leading this effort to bring the truth to this policy debate that is taking place across our country.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Hey, you can do that, folks. Go and sign that and add your voice to this conversation. It's critical. As I said, it's a matter of life and death. All right, speaking about the disinformation that's being put out there, we're going to go to Montana next, another one of the states that has a pro-abortion amendment on the ballot November 5th. So don't go away. We're back after this.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Thanks for joining us for this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. Again, let me remind you of the voter resources available for you. It's the toolkit. Text the word toolkit to 67742. All right, it's here in just 2 weeks. And I'm going through the 10 states where life is on the ballot. In Montana, voters are being called on to vote no on ballot measure number 14 for CI 128. Now, this would eliminate parental notification laws for abortion. Doesn't require a medical doctor to make decisions regarding the health of a pregnant mother, and erases decades of well-vetted laws to protect women in order to allow for extreme abortions at any stage of pregnancy, including late-term and partial birth abortions. Now, if voters in Montana recognize how extreme their state could become, would they still vote for this? Joining me now to discuss this is Jeff Laszloffy. He is the president of the Montana Family Foundation. Jeff, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's good to be with you.
So tell our viewers and listeners about ballot measure number 14 there in the state of Montana, and what is at stake in this?
Well, you described it well in your opening. This is one of the most extreme abortion measures ever to be introduced in any state in the United States. It would completely change not only the abortion landscape in Montana, but would also directly impact parents, their relationships with their kids, their ability to make decisions for their children. And it would also introduce woke transgender language into the Montana Constitution and give constitutional standing to the transgender agenda. All of that is hidden in this terrible amendment.
And we've seen that elsewhere. I mean, this is a coordinated effort across the country. And I know you had some analysis of the ballot measure done in terms of its language and how it fits into the Montana Constitution. And this is a significant departure from both style, substance, and as you mentioned, the language. It doesn't talk about pregnant mothers. It talks about pregnant persons. This is a radical departure for the Montana Constitution if this were to pass.
That's correct. And the thing that's challenging for us is the fact that the Montana Supreme Court put its thumb on the scale and actually wrote the ballot language that's going to be presented to people when they go to the ballot box. The problem with that is that it bears no resemblance to what's in the actual amendment itself. They watered down the ballot language so that it sounds fairly innocuous. They talked about abortions up to the point of viability, but they don't mention that on the advice and counsel of any healthcare provider, it doesn't even need to be a licensed physician, any healthcare provider can say that a woman needs an abortion past the point of viability, even late-term abortions up to the moment of birth, and that would be perfectly legal under this constitutional amendment.
And folks, we have a resource available for you that covers all 10 states and these measures that will be on the ballot. Simply text the word LIFE to 67742, LIFE to 67742. Maybe you don't live in a state that has this on the ballot, but you can share it with friends in states that do. Now, Jeff, this is, you know, all across the country, they're saying, well, this just restores abortion to where it was before the Dobbs case. That's not true. This goes all the way back to Roe, to where abortion is legal all the way through birth, but it does more than that. This actually puts it into the state constitution that will keep lawmakers in the state of Montana from doing anything, whether it's parental consent laws, and if it's a right, this also could lead to taxpayer funding of elective abortions, could it not?
It could, and that's by design. So the language actually says that the legislature cannot make any laws or regulations that burden the act of abortion. Well, every single law and regulation by definition burdens the item that it's being, you know, that's being litigated or that's being legislated. And so, of course, this is going to burden it. So this basically takes the legislature out of the picture. A moment ago, you talked about the memo that we commissioned. Professor Rob Nadelson, a constitutional law professor, wrote a memo that dug into the hidden language of the amendment and really parses the language that's in there from a legal perspective and allows the normal person like you and me to be able to understand what this law does in its entirety. And it's scary. It's really scary.
What do voters in Montana need to do, Jeff?
They need to go to montanafamily.org, get a copy of this memo. It's right there on the front page. And then they need to vote. It's important that people vote no on CI 128. We have the ability to stop this, but only if we get our friends and neighbors, our churches, and our pastors to speak out against it. The big thing is we have the chance to vote. We need to take that seriously and vote no on CI 128.
Now, Jeff, there are many people saying, well, this is so outrageous, it'll never pass. But what is the early polling showing?
The early polling is showing that it leans toward passage, but we're making up ground, and we just need to make it up more quickly. And we'll only do that if people actually turn out to the polls and vote.
All right. Well, Jeff, we appreciate all the work that you do there in Montana, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to see you.
All right. Good to see you as well. You may not live in Montana, and that's why I'm going through all 10 of these states to highlight what's going on, because if it's not in your state, it's coming to your state, especially if we don't stop it. So it has to stop in these states, whether it's Arizona, Florida, Missouri, Nebraska. If you live in one of these states, get the resource. Text LIFE to 67742. Share that with your friends. If you don't live in one of those states, go ahead and get that resource and send it to your friends who live in one of those states. All right, after the break, we're going to be joined by Senator Chuck Grassley. We're going to be talking about unaccompanied minors coming across the border, and we're going to continue our conversation about leaks in the Pentagon. That's coming up next on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in him through his word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible reading plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/Bible. And join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
The world is hurting. Streets are filled with crime. Families are broken. Sin is celebrated, and God is mocked. Everywhere we look, the wages of our sin are on full display. As Christians, we know that surrender to God's will is the solution to our biggest problems, but not everyone agrees. Even in church, we hear people say the most important thing is to be tolerant, that we shouldn't impose a morality on other people, and that loving our neighbor means celebrating what they do. But you can't do that. It's not that you don't love your neighbor, you do. But you care about God's opinion more than your neighbor's opinion, and this makes you different. In fact, sometimes it makes you feel alone, like you're the only one. But there is good news. You are not alone, not even close. Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, go to frc.org/sagecon and take the quiz to find out. The world is hurting, and we have the solution. We can't do it alone, but we can do it if we work together. That's what we're working toward every day. Join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon. SageCon to learn more. That's SageCon. SageCon to learn more.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. The toolkit, it's available for you. Just text the word toolkit to 67742. That's toolkit, one word, to 67742, and you'll have everything you need at your fingertips to cast an informed ballot. Our word for today comes from 1 Kings 14. Now Judah did evil in the sight of the Lord, and they provoked him to jealousy with their sins, which they committed more than all their fathers had done. For they also built themselves high places, sacred pillars, and wooden images on every high hill and under every green tree. And there were also perverted persons in the land. They did according to all the abominations of the nations which the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. The idolatry described in 1 Kings 14 was not merely bowing before a stick or stone. These idols were fronts for spiritual forces, as Paul describes in Ephesians 6:12, their principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this age, a spiritual host of wickedness in heavenly places. And you know, Satan's mission is to steal, kill, and destroy. And he entices humans by turning their fallen desires into sacraments of devotion. These practices weren't just moral failings, they were acts of spiritual rebellion. And guess what? They still are today. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. As the border crisis in the Biden administration continues to draw attention, new details have emerged regarding the trafficking of children. Whistleblowers have revealed that just within the last week, more than 150 unaccompanied migrant children as young as 5 years old have been sent across the Rio Grande into the small town of Eagle Pass. What accounts for this recent surge? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. He serves on five Senate committees, including the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Budget Committee, where he is the ranking member. Senator Grassley, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Glad to be with you. Thank you for having me, Tony.
Senator, before we jump into this immigration issue, I want to ask you about another pressing issue that you raised the alarm over a year ago. In September of last year, you wrote a letter to Lloyd Austin raising concern about individuals within the Department of Defense that may have been compromised by Iran. Is that connected to the leaks that we see that have took place, that have taken place in the Pentagon?
Assuming that the rumors we hear that she's involved with it, I don't know whether that's been confirmed yet, but if it has been confirmed, it's highly dangerous to our country. And I hope the FBI gets to the bottom of this leak quickly, because it puts lives at risk. And I've raised concerns about this employee before. The Biden administration didn't take these charges that we made a year ago seriously. And I just remember Biden's former envoy for Iran, Robert Malley, was caught mishandling classified documents himself.
Right.
And one thing's for certain, personnel's policy, Biden's soft-on-Iran approach, has made our world less safe, and you can bet that Harris would bring more of the same.
Well, I just think if this proves to be true, and you raised these questions a year ago and they didn't act on it, that makes this even more egregious. I want to move to the other issue that you've been sounding the alarm over, and that is the issue of migrant children.
Before you do that, can I say that Senator Wicker and I sent a letter today trying to get to the bottom of this thing. So I'm involved in a second letter as well. I just wanted to get that latest information in.
Well, we'll continue to track it as those come available. My point is, you were on top of this over a year ago, and let me, did you get a response when you sent this letter to Lloyd Austin in September of last year?
No.
Tragic. If in fact this proves to be true, this is dereliction of duty. This should be something that should be on the front pages of every newspaper in America.
It should be, yes.
Let's talk about another tragedy, and that is how children, migrant children, are coming across the border unaccompanied, and they're being lost. The Biden administration is losing them. We're finding them into forced labor and sex trafficking. How significant, how big is this problem?
Very, very big, by tens of thousands. And the law requires that the administration, any administration, report to Congress on the status of thousands of unaccompanied minors. Federal law requires Department of HHS, the Office of Refugee Settlement, to annually report. And in these 4 years of the Biden-Harris administration, there's been no report to Congress, and they're supposed to tell us how much money's been spent, how many kids are involved, and the location of these kids, and the status of them. And the whole idea is to protect the welfare of the kids who are here without their parents. Otherwise, they wouldn't be unaccompanied minors. And the idea is to make sure that these families are vetted where they're going to go. And we've had an example of a family going to a family connected to a gang. I think that was in Ohio, someplace in Ohio. And I think it was an MS-13 gang, as an example. And the whistleblower that brought this information to me has been taken off of that job. And so we've got these bad actors, and they're capitalizing on the Biden-Harden Harris open border policies and using kids as pawns. And once they're here, the Biden administration's not looking out for their welfare and their safety the way they should.
Senator, I want to go back to what you said. They are required to report to Congress on the status on this, and you've requested that, and you've not gotten that information. Is that correct?
Yeah, and even Cotton and I provided legislation that should have passed the Senate unanimously to get these reports. In other words, just passing a law to emphasize what the existing law was, and the Democrats wouldn't bring it up because I'm sure it's embarrassing to them. You know, at one time, Trump, when he was president, was castigated for when maybe 1,500 unaccompanied children could be accounted for. In this particular case, it's probably 85,000 that this administration and the press isn't paying any attention to it.
You've mentioned two things here just in our conversation where you have requested information or information was supposed to come to you as a United States senator from the state of Iowa, as a ranking member on an important committee. And you're telling me that, that they basically just thumb their nose at the Senate and say, we're not giving you that information. Is that an accurate portrayal?
Absolutely. Not enforcing law, not carrying out the law that they take a constitutional oath to carry out the law and passed by Congress. But listen, this is something the executive branch under both Republican and Democrats are not fulfilling the law. There's hundreds of reports to Congress that are necessary and accounted for by law that we never get those reports. This is just one example, but the bad thing about this example is the kids are in the custody of the federal government to make sure that they're in safe places, and our government doesn't even know where they are, and the government's supposed to report to Congress where they are, and they obviously, as we've said three times during this five-minute interview, we don't get those reports.
Right. And the tragedy is they're saying their open border policy is compassionate when, in fact, it is the furthest thing from compassion when they've lost these kids, forced into labor, and even into the sex trade. Senator Chuck Grassley.
I think the cartels are making more money from child trafficking and human trafficking than they are from drugs.
Actually, the data would show that that is true. Senator Chuck Grassley, I want to thank you for joining us today. Always great to talk with you, my friend. I appreciate all the work that you do on behalf of children and families on Capitol Hill and across the country.
I'll be back with you if you want me again.
Absolutely. Goodbye. I got you on speed dial. All right. Yesterday, U.S. and this is just to put a bow on that, if I can, tragic. And this is, as he pointed out, it happens more frequently than not that the executive branch, these huge government agencies, just pay no attention to Congress. This is, and they have an oversight role. And that's one place the media is supposed to work to help expose this. This is what we're trying to do here on Washington Watch, because the legacy media is a part of the left. Anyway. I'm going to wrap this. I'm going to move on to our next topic here, because yesterday, U.S. District Court heard arguments and testimony regarding a Louisiana state law requiring public schools to display the Ten Commandments in each classroom. Now, a lawsuit was filed against the legislation by attorneys representing a group of Louisiana parents, as well as Americans United for Separation of Church and State and the Freedom from Religion Foundation. An expert witness for the plaintiffs attempted to downplay the historical impact of the Ten Commandments in the history of the United States. So what does this have to do with the First Amendment, which Louisiana lawmakers are confident this law follows? Joining me now to discuss this is the Solicitor General for the state of Louisiana, who argued before the court yesterday, Ben Aganaga, who is joining us now from Louisiana. Solicitor General, thanks so much for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Tony. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Ben, tell us about yesterday's hearing.
Well, it went well, and it was long. We were there from 9 o'clock in the morning all the way till 5 p.m. The judge was very engaged with the parties on both sides. As you just noted, there was an expert testimony that dealt with an evidentiary question, and the afternoon was all about the merits of the lawsuit. Threshold question, should this lawsuit even be in court? Given that there's binding Fifth Circuit precedent that says this is actually not right because there are no displays on classroom walls, and so nobody knows what they look like, and thus a judge doesn't have the facts it needs to decide the case. And then we went on to the merits, which you alluded to, and as we told the judge, this law is plainly constitutional. There are applications of this law that are consistent with the First Amendment, and thus it should withstand legal scrutiny. So we're excited to see how it went, and we're excited to see the judge's imminent decision in the case.
you're confident, as well as the Louisiana lawmakers who advanced this, that the recent Supreme Court decisions on religious freedom and expression open the door for schools to do just what this law calls for?
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things, and this should not be a controversial proposition, one of the things that the legislature recognized in this legislation and that the Supreme Court has recognized, the Ten Commandments have historical significance as one of the foundations of our legal system. And I say that's not controversial because there was a decision called American Legion from the Supreme Court in 2019, where you had five justices. You had Justice Alito, Chief Justice Roberts, and Justice Kavanaugh, and you had Justice Breyer and Justice Kagan, who joined in that statement that the Ten Commandments have historic significance as one of the foundations of our legal system. And so the legislature was well within its means to say, we would like Louisiana students to understand the role that those commandments played in the foundation of our system. And that's what the legislature sought to accomplish through the legislation.
Now, Ben, yesterday in the court, the opponents of this brought forth a quote-unquote expert witness, Professor Stephen Green, who was associated with Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. He was special counsel for them. He said that there's really no connection with the Ten Commandments and the founding of the United States. Number one, what was his testimony relevant? And number two, was his testimony accurate?
No to both, Tony. I mean, the first point is it's not relevant. The Supreme Court has never said that an expert gets to dictate how a federal judge does his job in deciding what the law is. And so that was our whole point, is the court shouldn't even be considering this as expert testimony, because that kind of testimony is simply inappropriate in a case like this. But number two, he's just inaccurate. I think one of the most telling points of the examination of that witness is that when asked if his opinion was directly contrary to binding Supreme Court precedent, he said yes. He admitted on the stand that his view is directly contrary to what those five justices in American Legion said about the Ten Commandments. And I think as a factual matter, anybody who's been to Washington, D.C. would reject his opinion out of hand, because Moses and the Ten Commandments are all over Washington, right. D.C. They're in the Supreme Court courtroom. They're on the gates, the doors to the courtroom. They're in the House. Moses is the centerpiece of the House of Representatives. That's who right. the speaker looked at, and all the other lawgivers look at him. So this idea that the Ten Commandments and Moses have had no impact on American history and the American legal system is just, respectfully, it's wrong.
Ben, 30 seconds left. What are the next steps?
So next steps, Tony, in this case, is we're waiting for a court decision. He said he would issue a decision by November 15th, and we've asked him to move expeditiously. So if we need to, we'll go to the Fifth Circuit for emergency relief. There's a second case also pending in New Orleans, this one brought by a teacher. That case will be ripe for decision on November 6th, and so we'll be awaiting a decision in that case as well. There's a January 1st compliance deadline for schools in Louisiana, and so we hope that by the end of the year, schools will have clear legal guidance that they may and should and must comply with HB 71.
Do you think this lands at the Fifth Circuit?
I think it does, Tony. I think regardless of what this district court does, the losing party will take it up, because there is binding Fifth Circuit precedent on the jurisdictional point. I don't think it goes to the Supreme Court, because the jurisdictional question is so obvious to us and it's answered by binding right. precedent that there's really no need to go up to the Supreme Court. But it will go up on appeal.
All right. Solicitor General, I want to thank you for joining us. And I understand you did a great job arguing it yesterday before the court. So well done.
Well, thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me. And we really enjoy it. Have a good one.
All right. Folks, thank you for joining us as well. And again, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, when you've taken your stand, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.